folks. You are listening to the Yishai Fleisher Show here in Jerusalem, broadcasting to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are. Right now, I am in beautiful Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov in the heart of Jerusalem in Nachlaot. And yes, you know what that means. It's time for a spiritual cafe, broadcasting from Jerusalem with Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Yishai. It's great to be here.
It's great to be here. It's great to be here. What does that even mean? It means that it's great to be alive, which is the greatest here of them all, which is the greatest here to thank God for, is our very life itself, which is a gift that we can't even appreciate as much. And I think that's what it means when the rabbis tell us that a person doesn't know the miracles. Ein bala nes makir ben iso. A person doesn't even know the miracles that he's subject to. The greatest miracle of them all is life. And the second greatest miracle is life in Jerusalem and in Israel, reborn in the Jewish people, reborn in this land. And if you're not here and you listen to the show, it's like you're a little bit here for sure. And you're part of it. When you go into your sukkah, when you have that thought Friday night, you make that kiddush on the wine from the land of Israel, you are here. And the reason I'm talking about all this, Rabbi Mike, is because we are in the Torah portion where really the Torah begins 2.0, where humanity begins 2.0. It's a trilogy. Genesis, creation, God gets upset, thinks about destroying the world, sees Noah as a potential savior, tells in Parshat Noach, in the Torah portion of Noah, tells him to build an ark, destroys the world, saves Noah, starts the world again, and then separates all the nations into their languages, and the world order starts again. And that is like the whole setup for the introduction to this character, named at first Avram, and then later Avraham, in this Torah portion called Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha. Go to thyself. Go on. Go to yourself. Go to what you're supposed to be. Fulfill your potential only in the land of Israel. Leave Haran, where you have been very successful, in Mesopotamia, then in kind of Turkey. Leave this land where you've been successful and go to the Holy Land. That's where I will be shown to you. That's where I will also, God says, I will be shown to you, Abraham, but also you will be shown to the world. So that is Lech Lecha, these magical words. Go, go. The journey begins. The journey begins. That's basically the English title for Parshat Lech Lecha.
And, you know, every journey has to have a destination, but it doesn't have to stop there. One of the things I love about the name of this parsha, Lech Lecha, right, which is that command to go. And he definitely says, El Ha'aretz Asher Areka, right, to the land which I will show you, which is a real place, you know, where we're sitting right now. And yet it maintains that sense of visionary purpose, that somehow Avraham is always on the way. He's always, and even when he's here in the land, he's always on the way to a closer relationship with God. He gets to the land, he has to go up onto Har Moriah, right? Which is another Lech Lecha, another going that God commands him. And I feel so much, especially in these very difficult times here in the land of Israel, when I look around at my friends, yourself and myself and others that have made it here from so far away, that we just need to keep our eyes focused on the fact that being here is not the end of the journey. It's just another stage. And that the land should always be a destination for us.
Right. So on the one hand, for some people listening to the show, Aliyah and living in this land is a destination. It's like traverse from this, from a world in America or North America or Canada or any of the countries, anywhere you're listening from, and traverse this great challenge and come to the land of Israel. I have landed. I have made it. Mm-hmm. And so it is an end goal. It is a destination. But we know that it's only chapter one of your reborn life. And the Jewish law, the halacha, says so much. For example, a husband and wife who are married, who are barren for 7 years, are meant to be divorced so that they could try with another pair, with another pairing. But if they move, even in the last minutes of the sixth year, to the land of Israel, their allotment is yet another 7 years. You are reborn here. You could start anew here. And it's a different energy. So we know that it's actually chapter one of the rest of your life. And I want you to know, this is the reason I'm talking about this also today, is because it happens to be that just yesterday was my Aliyah anniversary.
Wow.
13 years here in the land of Israel with my wife Malka and now our children that were born onto us. And I want to point out one verse to you, Rabbi Mike, and that is that it says that they basically gathered up Abraham and Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, gathered up all their property, which they acquired, and all the souls that they had made, and that means all their flock, their people that had converted to monotheism and understanding God. They did that in Haran. They gathered everything up, and it says like this in Hebrew: "Vayitzu lalechet atzaknaan, vayavo atzaknaan." They left to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to the land of Canaan. What does that even mean? Why? What, we know that there's no extra words in Torah. Why talk about leaving to go to the land of Canaan and coming into Canaan? You could have just said, "And they came to Canaan." And the answer is, I think, for especially us Western Jews, Jews from Western countries, in that leaving America, leaving to go to Canaan, is in itself a great accomplishment, in itself a great hurdle and challenge. That in itself is a kind of aliyah, leaving America, North America, sure. leaving. And then coming in, that's a whole separate thing. Matriculation and challenge that we continue to face until we die. We hope that our kids will have an easier time at it. Go but those like. Are two separate challenges.
Yeah, I think it's true of most real life changes is that uprooting yourself is the first stage to rerooting. Mm. And so much of this parsha, I mean, the parsha begins with Avram uprooting and leaving behind his father's home and his country and his whole culture. And it really in the only comes to settle in the end when he enters into a completely new relationship with God through Brit Milah, through circumcision. Right, and in many ways, that's what God was inviting to, which is a relationship of intimacy.
There's really changes in, first thing, where you're living. Avram is asked to kind of leave his homeland and come into a new homeland. Then he's asked to change his flesh mm-hmm. and the structure of his flesh. And then he's asked to change the structure of his name. Mm-hmm. He's really going through a transformation.
It is, and in a certain point, he has to do it to himself.
Right.
That, to me, is the great message of circumcision, right? Some of the classic arguments between Rabbi Akiva and Tynus Rufus, right? Tynus Rufus, the character that the rabbis melded together, all the wicked Romans that they'd ever experienced into this one personality. And he says to Rabbi Akiva, well, whose works are more perfect, man or God's? And Rabbi Akiva kind of dodges the question, and he says, well, if God's works are more perfect, then why do you have to do circumcision? Right? Aren't we destroying, aren't we showing that God is an inadequate creator? And the answer is a very profound answer, which is that that's only true if you think that God means us to be passive recipients of creation. If what God wanted was Abraham or Avram to just go from one place to the other and be who he was, so then there would be no reason for Brit Milah, for circumcision. But what he wants is not only for it to be a transformative process, but for him to transform himself, to take a hand, literally, in the finishing of creation. And that, well, you said that the Torah of 2.0, which I very much like this is the Torah of partners in creation, right? That the passivity of the previous generations had led to flood and fire and brimstone, literally. Right, and now God said, I see that if creation is going to have meaning, it's going to have the meaning that it makes for itself together with me.
And I knew you were going to go with that because that's a theme that is recurrent in your the way you understand the Torah. What you've told us is really this issue of partnering with God. So it's not that God's work was incomplete. It's that he gave us the opportunity
it's
to complete
the depth
it.
Of his work.
Right. Right.
To create a partner who could actually be creative.
That is amazing. that's just a great thought. That I could just re-say what you just said, but I think it's so important, which is like that God created this partner who would help him finish the work of this world. Speaking of partners, I want to thank our friend Jack, who supports this program, and he would like all of these classes to be sponsored in honor of his wife Lillian and his sister Sarah. And he blesses them that Hashem should continue leading them on their spiritual journey. And that's exactly what Spiritual Cafe is about. It's about a spiritual journey. But not a journey of like, I don't know, and I'm looking here and here and here. No. It's a journey led by a light, led with a direction. We know the kind of the end goal, where what we're supposed to look like. there is an adventure along the way that we don't know where the next chapter is going, this and that, but we certainly have a guide and we certainly have a knowledge, and it's not a kind of, do you know what I'm talking about? These folks that tell us that like they have a journey where they take it to places that are outside of the bounds of Torah and our history and our knowledge.
Well, I think it's that challenge, that idea that a journey, by definition, is open, and therefore there's always the concern that it could go to places of nonsense or even evil. I think it's addressed by God's call to Avram right before he gives him the command to do circumcision. And it says here in the 17th chapter on the first line that Avram was 99 years old. Let's just contemplate that for a minute, right? Vayera Adonai el Avram, right? God appeared to Avram, Vayomer elav, Ani el Shaddai. Right, I am the Lord God Shaddai, which, remember, that name means a drawing of boundaries. Right?
It's got a few different meanings.
But either way, the second half is what I really care about. Hitalech lefanai vehayet tamim. And it's got both elements, right? Go before me and be tamim, be perfect, be whole, be innocent, be simple. Right? Like you said, there has to be this going. Just go out before me. You know, go
on your journey.
I'm not going to tell you. But you have to do it b'tmimut.
Right.
There has to be a faithful simplicity to God. And the amazing thing is that God tells him to be perfect, to be whole, right before he tells him to cut his flesh. Right? And,
wow.
And this is the great mystery. People say, well, wait, if I'm supposed to be perfect, isn't that how God made me? And the answer is, well, yes and no. God made you such that you can perfect yourself. And that is God's perfection, because creation finds its meaning in the fact that it has a partner who can express its creativity. If we were all just robots and like clay, models that God made, then what would be the point of creation at all? And you know what the beauty of, and this is how you can save yourself when you go on this type of journey from drifting away from God, is this notion of being tamim comes back later in the Torah. God willing, in months and months, we'll talk about it when it shows up in the book of Deuteronomy and Devarim. Right? When it says, you know, don't listen to the necromancers or the sorcerers or all these, you know, witches. No. You listen to the Navi, right?
The prophet,
and be tamim. It's the same call. Right? Tamim tiyeh im Hashem Elokecha, which means that you have to trust the fact that you can really hear the voice of God in your heart, and you have to train yourself not to deceive yourself, that you're listening to yourself, you're listening to your desires, you're listening to your culture and the influences, the media. No. There is a way, by cutting away that flesh that stands between us and God in right relationship, and to actually hear the voice and be tamim.
So there is a journey to be had, and there's going to be adventures, but there's a way to do all those adventures and get through those adventures with the faith of God. And for some reason, just my mind went to the place of the Holocaust, where so many Jews were destroyed, and yet they had faithfulness on their lips. And one could be cynical about that, but quite the opposite. You see that through the Holocaust and through that faith, the Jewish people were reborn in the land of Israel. And that's the time that we're living in now. Another aspect of perfection, and this is an important chapter also for me in this Torah portion of Lech Lecha, is the issue of war.
Mm-hmm.
War. We talked about leaving and coming to the land of Israel. We talked about fixing or finishing off the creation of God in the flesh. We didn't talk about yet the name of Avraham, who his name has changed, and basically his kind of spiritual DNA has changed. But also the issue of war. It's easy to come to, or at least reasonable and logical to come to a conclusion that a spiritual searcher and journeyman would come to search for nirvana. And if he found nirvana, stay there. Don't leave nirvana. This world is a dirty world. Find a way to escape it. Find a way to surpass it. Find a way to not be sullied by it, as opposed to the consciousness of trying to perfect it and beat down the dark energies that are in this world. And so many times you meet religious people who want to be pacifistic and outside of the fight because they don't want to be sullied, because they're looking for spiritual perfection. Here we have the story that Lot, who's Abraham's nephew, is captured, and Abraham pursues the captors and fights a war, a very a bloody, serious, violent war. Our Abraham, Our forefather Abraham is on the one hand a man who's got his tent open to all four sides. He loves guests. He will wash their feet. He will feed them. He is a kind and good man. And yet, don't mess with Abraham. If you're gonna mess with him, he's gonna get out there. He's gonna get his gear together. He's gonna gird himself, and he's going to get his belt and his bow and arrow and his swords and his spears and all that physical stuff to go out to war to destroy evil and to perfect this world through that as well.
Well, it's important to note that there is no leader in the Tanakh, in the Bible, who is not also a leader in war, mm-hmm. right? And I don't believe that that's just some sort of cultural anachronism that, oh, the world was a bloody place then, but now we're much better off. Because, of course, if you read the news, you see it's not true. I think it's because of the very deep difference that you're naming between this Nirvana Eastern model, right, which it gets carried over into Western culture in the world-denying aspects of Christianity and some other world religions, right? That basically this world, like you said, is a mess, and the best one can hope for is to detach from it, right? There's nothing further from the path of the Torah than detachment from the world. It is true that there are times in life or moments or aspects of self that one, I think, rightfully desires to keep elevated and separate. But this is a story about Brit. It's a story about covenant. We're not a people of non-attachment. We're the people of relationship. And the reality is, as you are rightly saying, a relationship is, of course, about love and the generosity and the givingness of Abraham. But a healthy relationship is also about boundaries. And that if you really love a person, you need to be surgical in the precision that you're willing to bring to what you are and what you're not, and what you believe a relationship should be and what it's not. And if you're willing to allow evil to grow within a relationship, then you don't really love that relationship. It's not love to allow evil to grow in the world. It's just fear.
You have to engage it. You have to engage evil.
You might be able to fix it. You might be able to elevate it and transform it into light. But sometimes it just needs to be destroyed.
And it certainly needs to be fought. If you're able to destroy it, that's great.
It absolutely needs to be fought. And whether that fight happens through a clarity of what good is, or whether it happens through your posture of unbending will, or whether it happens through exactly how Avraham did it in this story, which is gathering up your 318 men and tying your swords on and marching out to battle to take back what has been taken away from you.
This Torah portion of Lech Lecha also mentions specific places in the land of Israel. It's important to understand that we're living in a very ancient land. There are many really ancient cities here that are 4,000 years plus. We're talking about places like Jericho and Jaffa, Shechem. In this week's Torah portion in Lech Lecha, Shechem is mentioned. Beit El is mentioned. Shechem is, you hear today, that's where the tomb of Joseph is. Beit El, that's where Jacob had his revelation with God. Hebron is mentioned, the Dead Sea is mentioned, that's where the war between the four and five kings took place. It's very tied into the places of the land of Israel. It's geo-specific. It ain't a detached story of morality. It happened here.
We're also the people of embodiment. Right, the Torah is not a set of moral principles or theological truths. It's not even, just divinely revealed thoughts. It's the demands for action in real time, in real bodies, in a real place. You know, when I walk the land of Israel and I think about these Torah portions and I see these places, I'm intoxicated by the sense that I, in the present, have one foot in the past and my face firmly toward the future, because that's what we're doing here now. We're trying to figure out how it is we can live a present which honors our past and helps us to build the future which this past demands.
All right, folks, you are listening to the Yishai Fleischer Show. We are broadcasting from Jerusalem, from Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov. I wish you could be here with me right now. It is a Sephardi style Beit Midrash. It's got a raised platform in the middle, with chairs and benches, comfy benches with the cushions around in a circular way around it. There's a menorah made out of a silver-like metal. There's a beautiful Aron Kodesh, which is the ark where the Torahs are kept. There's a lot of lights. There's fans. It feels old and new at the same time. And I guess we are the old and new people. We are an old people, an ancient people being reborn in our land. Reborn means also we are born anew. We are kind of young at this whole story. So that's happening at the same time, which is an incredible thing. And we're going to take a little break. We're on Spiritual Cafe. Rabbi Mike Foyer is the educational director at this Beit Midrash. And he's with me here. We're learning Parshat Lech Lecha. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, folks, we're back here on the Yishai Fleischer Show, Spiritual Cafe. Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov, Rabbi Mike Foyer is with us. And, I remembered something that Rav Soloveitchik, I found a quote from Rav Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, you know, that Abraham really wasn't that famous until he fought the war. Mm-hmm. And that's when people were like, wow, this guy's serious. This guy takes liberty and freedom seriously. He fights for it. And that consciousness, and that idea, that identification of the Jewish people as bully fighters from the get-go, and non-pacifists, fighters, is an important identification. We have to have that. If we were really full-on Jews right now, we would take on ISIS. Because these guys are destroying decent people around the world, certainly in the Middle East. They're bad guys. They're evil incarnate. And their entropy incarnate, and their destruction incarnate. They're really the anti-Jewish force.
I think what holds us back is our fear and our unwillingness to accept the fact that we have a mission to be partners in creation. Right? We're so used to the litany of history of people who are sure about themselves. In the end of the day, they just end up train wrecking on their own desires and self-interest. Whereas we should see Avraham. And we should see our history and say, yeah, we can be sure about ourselves that we're the people that God put in the world to help fix the place. And evil is our target. And we need to build good and we need to destroy evil. And I think that many Jews find that very frightening for, you know, reasonable historical reasons. But like you said, if we're going to be born anew, then we need to actually review all these cherished assumptions we hold about what it means to be a Jew. You know, whenever you say that the Jews are fighters, and you know, like I think of, like, I grew up playing football, and my mother, God bless her, she'd be healthy and well, always used to say to me, I don't think Jews play football, you know? And I always hated that answer. And then one day I came across a picture of the Arch of Titus. You know what the Arch of Titus is, yeah?
Sure, sure.
Right? When the Romans destroyed the Second Temple, they built a great victory triumph arch in Rome. And then Titus brought back fighters from the Jews that he had defeated and marched them under the arch in Rome. You know why? Because they were so mean and burly looking that he wanted the Roman people to understand how mighty this civilization was that he had defeated. Right? We have this picture from exile, like we were carried out in exile like passive slaves. What we forget is that we went fighting and kicking and screaming. And frankly, that we came out, or at least have taken the first step out of exile, fighting.
The Romans thought that we were one of the most formidable forces they ever fought. Nobody rebelled against the Romans. And if you did and you were defeated, you certainly didn't get up 60 years later after having been totally wrecked and fight them and you know, and beat them. We won. We win Jerusalem. Bar Kokhba beats back the Romans for 3 years and captures Jerusalem and starts the sacrificial service again.
There are actually three revolts. In 69-70, in 117, and in 135. The one in 117, what's called the Mer HaTfutzot, the Kitos War, was arguably the most brutal of them all, and for many reasons doesn't make it so much into the history books. But three times in the space of 65 years to rebel against Rome.
And they even minted coins.
Yeah.
You know, just being like, we've beaten the Jews! You know, it was a big deal to fight the Jews. And the Jews are also supposed to fight, as we started talking about, bad guys and dark energies. One of the places that that's spelled out is in a fascinating covenant that God makes with Avram, and that is called Brit Bein HaBtarim, which is the covenant between the parts. Basically, God tells Avram, get nine animals, split them from nose to tail, put those pieces side by side. And then God kind of makes a covenant with him. He says, I will give you control of these 10 nations, not seven, the full Monty 10, the Middle East, all the nations that were here previous. not just locally here in Canaan, but throughout the Middle East region, then a kind of heavy sleep falls upon Avram. The only other heavy sleep like that recorded is by Adam, by the first man who God put to sleep, put him under anesthesia in order to take out a rib. Here again, that word, tardema, in anesthesia, falls over Avram, and he is given a vision, and that vision is of a pillar of smoke and fire going through between these parts. And God says, guess what? Your children, yes, your children are going to be enslaved in a land not theirs. They're going to be enslaved in Egypt, and they're going to come out after 400 years, and they will come out with great wealth. And they'll return to this land, and you shall be buried in a proper old age. I shall give you, of course, if I forgot to mention, at the time Avram was childless, and therefore this was an incredible revelation that didn't seem to have grounding in reality. A lone man, an old lone man who believed in God. Probably other people thought he was a little bit crazy on top of a hill, and then he hears the voice of God says, you're going to be a great nation. Kings are going to come from you, and you're going to control this land, and you're going to get rid of 10 nations. Your children are going to exile. It's going to be really kind of unpleasant, and then they're going to come back, and they will inherit this land. A grand vision was given to Avram on a very tall hill. We believe it's in one of two places, either on the mountains of the about where the Hermon is around there, or other people say it is the mountains close to Beit El, the mountain that where I remember it very well, that huge mountain that's just across from Beit El, a tall mountain that looks both onto the Dead Sea and into the Mediterranean Sea.
So we hear in this the two elements that really make Am Yisrael great. Because first, the beginning of the parsha, God says, go to this land where I'll show you, and there I'll make you a great nation. Right? And that's the visionary, positive goal that we contain within us. We know where we're headed. Here we are, and I think about it all the time. We're sitting in Yerushalayim, sitting in this beautiful place. And if it weren't for the fact, for the last 2,000 years, every single one of our ancestors knew where they were headed. Felt it deep down inside. Didn't know how necessarily to get there. They didn't necessarily know the way, but they had a clarity of vision. You know, like even to the point, like Reb Shlomo says, if you ask a Jew on the way to the gas chambers where you're headed, he'd tell you, Yerushalayim. He's headed to Jerusalem. Right? And that's that vision of go to this land and you'll be great there. And yet there's another side to our history, which is this. And in order to become great, you're going to suffer. You're going to go down into Egypt, what later will be called the Kor Barzel, right? The iron crucible. Because this is what life is. If you don't get tried and tested, if you don't have the slag burned off and the dross turned to pure metal, then that vision you have inside you will always just be a dream. Right? And to live in a time today where we have all these strengths and the purified nature gone through 2,000 years of exile, and to be tasting the vision is just an incredible merit that, to me, just never ceases to amaze.
What I love about Brit Bein HaBtarim is this covenant between the parts is that it's really, really weird.
Yeah.
And I always was wondering, what is this really about? And I always think to myself that the weirder parts of the Torah are probably the ones that really beg you to dig in a little bit deeper.
Sure.
And at Yeshiva University, it was Rabbi Angel who taught us that in those times, in the Ugaritic period, as it's called, that's one of the ways that covenants were sealed. You would slice an animal from nose to tail, and both parties would walk through it. And that would be a sign that the deal is sealed. So that was one of the aspects. I promise you, I'm giving you a kind of local time, this era-related way of signing a contract with you.
It's the gritty reality. These aren't children's right. stories.
Right, exactly. That's the stuff. But I have another take on it, which I think is helps us also understand another thing, which is maybe what happened was is that God wanted to show him a mini YouTube clip, a mini prophecy, a vision of the splitting of the Red Sea. God says to him, it's going to be very dramatic, and it's going to look something like this. There's going to be a pillar of smoke and fire, and they're going to go through these great splits, and it's going to be, and they're going to come out, they're going to be a nation. They're going to come out of Egypt and they're going to be reborn as a nation. That's what it's going to look like. And it was a bit of a, like, of that vision that he gave him of the splitting of the Red Sea. That's what Brit Ben Haptarim is about.
So I want to add one more piece because, you know, in the commentaries, they say each of these different animals also relates to the various nations through which we passed. And in that sense, he sees a vision of all Jewish history that you're going to pass through. You're actually going to go from nose to tail. And if you think about what that means, we've definitely gone in through the mouth and out through the other end, through several civilizations, all of which are gone.
Mm.
Right? And it's that passing through. And at the end, there you'll be. A great nation. All of the slag gone and only the pure remain.
So, ladies and gentlemen, what we're talking about is journey. That is basically Lech Lecha. Keep the journey going. At the same time, I think we've talked about it in various different ways, that journey is not a blind journey. It's a journey with a vision. It's a journey with a past. It's a journey with a destiny. And we're on an amazing timeline. And certainly, we're in a great era where that journey is coming into clarity and into focus. Of what we're supposed to be doing in this world. So don't doubt that it's at this very time where the journey is getting clear and more kind of energized, that the dark forces are arraigned against us more than before. And indeed, while we're in this beautiful, relaxed, and just spiritual place in Jerusalem, Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov with Rabbi Mike Foyer, it's the eye of the storm, because around us there's a storm that certainly wants to stop us from getting reaching home. And reaching that destiny and making this world the tikkun olam, the final fixing, the better place that it's supposed to be. Rabbi Mike Foyer, Shabbat Shalom and happy Lech Lecha.
Shabbat Shalom.
All right, folks, stay tuned, stay connected. Write me an email, show@yishaifleisher.com. Stay strong. Thanks again to Jack, who blesses his wife Lillian and his sister Sarah. We bless you as well, that Hashem should take you on a spiritual journey. Blessing to you and a blessing on all of us. Stay tuned, stay strong, and Shabbat Shalom.